So good afternoon. This is Jamie Sexton, president of the Sexton Group. Welcome to the APC Teletown Hall, sponsored by our firm and Pollmakers. I'd like to really thank Pollmakers for Rachel and Amber for helping us put the thing together. But anyway, my name is Jamie Sexton. I'm a board member with APC. What we're trying to accomplish here is we're here to kind of alleviate some of the uncertainty and answer some questions about how we deal with this uncertain time that we're dealing with the coronavirus. Over the next hour or so, we're going to hear from some of the more business savvy members of our association and who can help explain some like business strategies and some things you could do to kind of help your business not only survive these trying times, but also hopefully maybe even thrive a bit. We're going to let a few more people join the call, and then once we join the call, then we're going to get it rolling. We have several speakers today. During the course of the call, if you have any questions whatsoever, all you have to do is press 0 on your phone. You'll be connected to one of our staff who will take your question, and then we'll take your questions over the course of the next hour. So we decided to put this together about a week ago during our board meeting that we thought we were going to have in D.C., but sadly didn't happen. And we're looking at the calendar, we look at the primary calendar, and, you know, that's on pause. Our legislative sessions are on hold. Our corporate clients are sitting on their hands waiting to figure out what's happening with the economy. So we're all sitting around like we're asking ourselves, how are we going to survive the next 3 or 4 months? You know, am I going to have to lay people off? Am I going to have to cut back services? Am I going to have to cut back hours? And what this call is going to do is we're looking to help provide some resources to you and some strategies to you so to help you kind of get through. So right now, I want to remind everybody to press 0 if you have a question. Right now, I'd like to introduce Trey Richardson. He's a board member with AAPC. He's also the managing partner of Stagac Public Affairs in Oklahoma City. Trey, I would say, is a resident business person. I've learned more from hanging around Trey in the last 6 months than about how to actually run a business than I have in the 25 years of operating my own business. So without further ado, I'd like to throw it to Trey Richardson.
Hey, Jamie, thank you very much. I've only been doing it 34 years, so I've learned a little bit over the time. Today I want to talk about 3 general areas. Number one, paying attention to your current business. Number two, I was going to address some issues of culture and what it means to be a leader and how to lead your team, which a lot of you already know. But then finally, demonstrate a value to your marketplace. So we could start a little bit about paying attention to your business. One thing, I've been through several recessions. I've been through several crises. There's an article that I'm going to be referencing that AAPC sent out the other day about just the political finance itself, and you see the ups and downs of our marketplace over the last 30 years. But every time I've been through this, I start with the core business. So number one, you know, things to do: conserve your cash. Number one, cash is king in these types of marketplaces, and you do that so by cutting expenses. Collecting your accounts receivable and accelerating your billing. If you normally don't bill to the 10th or 15th of the month, you need to change that to the last day of the prior month or the first of the month. Our invoices for April went out tonight, or went out today, actually. Another way to accomplish this, if you're dealing with corporate clients or organizational clients, you tend to deal with accounts payable staff. So we made a point about 15 days ago to communicate with every client. We have about 90 clients in our corporate client base, and we made a point to send a letter to every single one of them articulating what our our what our information was with regard to ACH transactions, wire transactions, mailing instructions, who to contact, if you had questions, and so on. The big challenge is also, you know, sending past due notices, statements, and personal communication with them, I think, is very important. The other thing that we've tried to do with certain clients is be the bank for the clients. Set up our own accounts on behalf of the clients, have all the money that's coming in for the organization and go through your bank. Guess what? You get paid first. I've been in fundraising now for 34 years, and I generally, our reputation in the marketplace is our staff always gets paid, even though not all the campaign staff get paid. It's because we are the bank for most of our organizations. Second thing I'd suggest is do a risk assessment of your client base. Develop both conservative and moderate scenarios. Who's at risk? We have a lot of Fortune 100 companies. I had two Fortune 10 companies call in the last 2 days and ask if they could pay us what they owe us now in the fourth quarter of this year. That's a stretch for us. We're a cash flow business. So from a scenario planning perspective, I have plans for a 10% reduction, a 30% reduction, a 50% reduction in revenues, each with its own trigger. What happens if, when do I pull the trigger on the 10% reduction? Well, I pulled the trigger on the 10% reduction today. I just announced to our staff travel cuts and a few other things, freezing hiring and so forth, that happened because we haven't seen it yet, but I think it's coming because these clients are telling us they're not going to pay us till the end of the year. But we also have triggers for a 30% reduction and a 50% reduction. After 9/11, for example, we lost 40% of our client base in about 2 months, and it took us about 6 months to get it back. Fortunately, at the time, we were a small staff. We didn't have 22 employees. We only had 4. But as you can imagine, 40% of revenue reduction was dramatic for us. So having learned through that, we did two things. One, increase your top-line revenues through diversification of deliverables. And in addition, if you're in the production side of the business, like we're in more of the services side, but we also have production capabilities. Production gets money in the door today. Services get money in the door in a month from now or 2 months from now. So try to, you know, identify production opportunities, whether that's direct mail, that's social media, that's video, that's polling, whatever that happens to be, whatever you're involved with. Those production projects tend to pay up front, and they tend to pay quickly, and they're short-term projects, but they get the money in the door. Also, decrease your bottom-line expenses through immediate cuts. Like I said, we cut existing travel and curtailed travel for the balance of the year, even after July. We've reduced our overhead by about 20% in the last week. And we've also gotten rid of what I consider non-essential employees and suppliers, other outside service people. We had a large group of interns in our office working for the spring that were all hoping to be held over for the summer. And guess what? I got rid of them all today. I don't need them in this marketplace, and they don't have mouths to feed. They're all in school. When staff cuts are necessary, if it has to come to that, obviously, you get rid of your underperformers first. We've all heard the story about the 10% rule. The people at the bottom 10% of your performance charts, you can go first in these times. However, I would suggest that if you need replacements, if you're going to need people in July, August, September, October, as the elections ramp up, you know, what true savings will be realized if you get rid of somebody today? We generally operate 30% understaffed because, in my opinion, consulting staff are worth 3,000 hours a year, not instead of the normal employee of 2,000 hours a year. But what I've found is onboarding a new employee at our firm, even if they're an intern, it can take 2 to 3 to 6 months. So it takes time, talent, and treasure away from revenue, what I consider revenue-generating activities. And so think hard. If you're getting rid of somebody you're paying, you know, $20,000-$30,000 a year for right now, or on a pay period that's $1,000 to $2,000 a month, you might want to keep them around for a few months if you know you're going to need them, because it's going to cost you money to onboard a new person down the road and train them. Consider implementing, before you cut staff, I always consider implementing cuts to salaries for senior staff, and obviously owners first. Owners, we all got into this taking risk, and guess what? We get all the reward, but we get all the risk too. So the first downside is the owners take cuts. Once the owners take cuts, then it goes to the officers of the company, and then from the officers to the senior directors. Once we get beyond the division heads in my company, for example, I have four divisions. Once we get past our division heads, I treat everyone else the same. So if we have to make those cuts in salaries down the road, it's me first, then the officers of the company, then our senior manager or senior directors, and then beyond that, we throw everyone else in the same boat. Thankfully, I've never had to go past owners. In this type of environment in the past, but we try to keep our people fed, but it helps, don't consider across the board cuts all at the same time. I know General Motors just announced the other day 20% across the board. And you know, there's some people obviously who work there who can't afford a 20% cut in salary. The other thing we do is deferring salary increases and promotions. We froze new hires. We have two current positions open. We froze them. We also reduced our outside services, our reliance on third-party 1099 contractors. So unless they were a revenue-generating or what I consider a profit center as a contractor, they're considered non-essential to us right now. We also have found some ways over the last year to reduce our internal costs by moving our HR, 401k, benefits, and all those types of things to a professional employer organization. We've actually realized savings. A lot of people think PEOs are going to cost them more money, but actually what we found it decreased our operational costs, and it freed up our operations manager to focus on other things that we needed that person to do, that were revenue-generating activities. Work with your bankers and any lessors that you have for loan or lease modifications. We have a small office in D.C. We have a house in D.C. We have a house in Oklahoma City. We have an office in Oklahoma City. We have negotiated reduced lease rates for our operating properties for our business in both those locations, and we are working with our banks right now on loan modifications to reduce either the interest or the maturity date, or extend the maturity dates, reduce the interest, and so on, or loan deferments for that matter. And then finally, into the business of your business, I want to make a point. We've heard a lot about the Small Business Administration and the CARE Act. So I think it's important to know, number one, realize upfront, AAPC is considering taking action with the SBA on this issue. And the issue is this, the government's disaster fund. The SBA does not currently make loans to political or lobbying firms, but that may change, which is why the AAPC itself is considering taking action. If we do have the opportunity to take action, there are two things that that people may want to consider. First is the Economic Injury Disaster Loan. And that is an SBA 7B loan. It's applied for through the SBA. It's a 10-year, 3.75 interest loan. You can take up to $10,000 in advance and get that within 3 days, and you don't have to pay that $10,000 back. So if you get a $400,000 loan for operations, the first $10,000, you don't have to pay back. You're actually only getting a loan for $390,000. The second part of the CARES Act that I think is important for our membership is called the Paycheck Protection Program. It's a great program that can be partially forgiven, and it can be used for payroll, benefits, rent, utilities, core operational costs, and so forth. The way you calculate it, for those of you who don't know, is you take 250% of your average monthly expenses, operating costs, and that includes your payroll, benefits, and so on, as well as any rents or mortgages that you have to pay, utilities, and so forth. You can take a loan, and that loan will not have to be paid back. But you can only take a loan. You take the monthly cost of all your operations, of those payroll costs and rents and so forth, times 250%, and that's the amount of loan you can get, and it will be forgiven. I'm not an expert on this, but we've been talking to bankers and the SBA about this for the last few days, so it's something to consider. If you are interested, call your banker immediately, because Treasury is going to come out with directions for this by, I believe, on Friday. So on Monday, every bank in America is going to be dealing with this. So with that, I'd ask if anybody on that covered 7 points really quickly. I'd like to turn it back over to Jamie. If you have any questions, always press zero.
There we go. Thanks, Trey. I mean, you could talk for an hour and a half with all the information you have about how to protect yourself in situations like this. Again, I'm kind of disappointed. I mean, we got a bunch of, you know, we got 75 political consultants on this call, and not one person is off the desk question. I find, you know, normally political consultants like to ask a lot of questions. So, anyway, again, if you have any questions about anything that Trey's had to say or any of our other speakers, please press zero on your phone and you'll be connected to someone who will take your question. We can set that up. Our next speaker is Liz Chatterton. She's the founder and partner of Chatterton Listingi. Their firm is direct mail. She's based in Virginia. She's a longtime friend and partner of our firm. She's going to speak a little different side of the business compared to what Trey had to say. But I always find Liz is super insightful when it regards to how to run your business. So without further ado, I'll throw it to Liz Chatterton.
Well, thanks, Jamie, and thanks to everyone on the call. I hope everyone is staying safe and trying to stay at least somewhat sane in this new normal. So I was actually asked to talk a little bit more about working from home, and I find this question really funny because I've never had a whole lot of issue working from home for about 10 years, actually, and I always find it interesting that people do have issues working from home. And I find, or have found in my conversations, that the secret to working from home is compartmentalization. And so if you're not great at compartmentalization, yes, you may find it a little difficult. But I really had four rules from working from home, and in full disclosure, so I worked out of my house when I started my firm in 07 and 08, and then just bought a bigger house instead of moving into an office, and worked there until 2016. And so for a while, it was just me alone in my house working, and then I would have staff, frankly, for many years come to my house. And it was an interesting dynamic. And so here would be my four rules of working from home. Number one, I believe very wholeheartedly you have to have a separate space. So not everybody has, especially if you've got kids, you may not have an empty room or a guest room, but if you do have the ability to set aside one room that can only be for the office, I would highly, highly, highly recommend you do so because it allows you to literally go to work. You go into that room, you sit down, you work, and when you are done, you leave that room, and frankly, I would tell you don't go back unless you have to work. So it's this idea of honest-to-peak compartmentalization as if you are going to the office and leaving the house behind. I fully respect that with lots of people in the house, particularly children, this can get tough. But I see people on video conferences right now working from kitchen tables, working from their couch. I'm not going to tell anybody how to live, but to me, I wouldn't be able to do that very well. I needed to have a space where I worked and then a space where I didn't work so I could, frankly, keep my sanity. The second thing, and this is sort of all over Facebook right now, but I do think it's necessary. Get up every day, take a shower. Ladies, you don't have to do your hair and put on makeup. Men, you don't have to shave. But I think if we get into day three with not showering, not only will anyone in our house not speak to us, but then we truly start to feel like we're living in some kind of crazy isolation. And I don't think that's healthy, personally. Not to mention, we're all on video conference now, so took a girlfriend of mine a couple of days to realize that she actually was being seen live on television screens from her home, and she started showering because she got made fun of. So I think getting up every day, taking a shower, treating it like a day that you're going to work, putting on, you know, obviously whatever clothes you want to wear. I used to have a rule in my office that if you would wear it to the grocery store, you could wear it to my home office. What surprised me the most was what people would be willing to wear to the grocery store. But, you know, the bottom line was most people will not wear their pajamas to the grocery store. Most women will put on undergarments when they go to the grocery store. I think it's important to maintain an air of I am going to work now, even when you're at home. And I think that includes at least dressing to the point where you wouldn't be embarrassed if other people saw you. My third rule was not watching television. And this is a controversial rule. I have friends who work from home who have the television on in the background all day. Kudos to them. I can't do that. If the television is on, I'm going to stare at it. So my rule was I had, being the good liberal, I had NPR on in the background all day, mostly as just background noise, kind of company when no one else was there. Some friends that I know have classical music on Pandora or Spotify or something in the background that frankly makes it so that you don't feel quite so alone, but is noise. And that can also calm you down, frankly. I found NPR to be very, very soothing at stressful points. But if I'd had on CNN or if I'd had on something else, I wouldn't be able to work. I'd be too focused on television, probably throwing things at it, not terribly productive for me. And the final thing is, and this is another controversial rule, but I really felt strongly about it personally, which is I never did anything at home that I wouldn't do at the office. And what I mean by that is I never did laundry. I never cooked dinner. I never cleaned the house. I never did things in my home office, whether there were staff there or not, that I wouldn't do in an office setting. And I'm not talking about loading a dishwasher. That's fine. But I would have never vacuumed the house. I would have never swept the pillows. No. Because to me, those are things that you do when you are at home. And when you are at an office, you need to be working. And that was the compartmentalization that I had to put basically into my head and onto myself in order to separate my being at home in the evening and trying to relax, but being there in the exact same place during the day and having to be productive. So those are my four rules of working from home. It is not easy for a lot of people, but I think if you can really put some restrictions on yourself, you can do it, because the bottom line is I think we're all going to be working from home for at least a couple more months. So better to put good rules in place now rather than later. Back to you, Jamie.
Thanks, Liz. I think the importance of routine, I mean, you can't put a price on it. And I think you made some really good points about that. I mean, these are times, I mean, I think having a routine gets you in a way that your mind doesn't stray from, to things that you could be worrying about, but you have no real control over. So, we've got one question in. I'm going to take this person live. Is this person there? We could not get your name.
This is Brad. Brad Chisholm.
Hey, Brad, how are you?
Hey, buddy. Just had a question for Trey. I've had three or four different versions of the what qualifies in addition to payroll for the Payroll Protection Act. Some documents that say utilities, some go a little bit further and say office rent. And I'm curious if Trey has clarification on that, or we got to wait on Friday.
Yeah, Brad, it's good to hear from you. I haven't talked in a while. But I've been in communication, and AAPC's banker is Eagle Bank. I'm not putting a plug in for them, but they've been very helpful in this process, John Boat and his team. But as I understand the Paycheck Protection Program, to include the following as the funds can be used for the following: payroll and commission payments, group health care benefits and insurance premiums, mortgage interest payments, not mortgages, not principal, but the interest payments, rent and lease payments, utilities, and then interest on any other debt obligations that were incurred before the covered period. So, you know, obviously that covers a majority of your core operating cost. Doesn't include marketing and so forth, but it includes all those things.
Perhaps I wasn't clear. I mean, I get what it can be used for. The question is whether or not in calculating the 2.5 months salary, there's also a positive calculation for any of that utility overhead and office overhead. I saw conflicting reports online about that.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry, Brad. I don't have I unfortunately don't have the details of that. I definitely suggest you call an SBA expert on that. And that Paycheck Protection Plan is actually through your banker, not through the SBA. And it hasn't, I don't think it's been officially released yet.
No, they're saying 14 days from the passage of the Act is when the rules have to be out. It could be earlier, but that's what I'm reading.
Right.
Okay, if you have any more questions, folks, again, please press zero on your phone, and you'll be connected to a screener. What we'd like to do now is one of the things we set up is we set up a poll question. And this is how this is going to work is we're going to ask a question, and then when we ask the question, you're going to be able to vote and answer that question as you see fit. So I'm going to ask this question, and there we go. Okay. So basically, this question is going to be about how the COVID crisis is affecting your business. So on a scale of 1 to 5, where 1 is not at all and 5 is a great deal, how much do you think the coronavirus or COVID-19 crisis will negatively affect the financial health of your business? I'd like to thank Trey for the question. So we have some time here. So, again, you can use press 1 through 5 on your phone to rate how this is going to negatively affect the financial health of your business. Okay, now people can continue to vote on this through the rest of our call here. We've got our worst case scenario part of our conversation out of the way, and we appreciate Trey's insights and Liz giving us ideas about how to kind of work this in terms of how this might just end up being a long haul. But we'd like to pivot to so there's always kind of a silver lining to every cloud. That silver lining's, it's bigger for others than, for the next, several minutes, we'd like to talk to folks about, how to look for, identify opportunities like that and take advantage of them. So, Becky Donatelli will be our next speaker. She's the president of Campaign Solutions. She's a long, board member here at AAPC. She's been a pioneer in the fundraising business on the Republican side. So I'm going to throw it to Becky now. We're going to talk about these opportunities.
Thanks, Jamie. So I guess I'm the positive speaker in the group. It's just kind of my thing anyway. That tends to be where one of my strengths are. But honestly, we're seeing places that we can really help our business and change our business in a positive way. Lucky we're digital. Luckily, we've always been digital. We have offices where people come to work, but we've had people in our company for years that have never come to the office. Because we're in a digital space, this is hurting us less than most companies. Our business is not off. Our fundraising is up because there's so many things that were done offline that can only be done online now. We're probably busier than ever. So to all my digital compadres, this is a time really to make hay and take advantage of some of the things that are coming our way. So Trey brought up a lot of banking information, and I would say to you that if you were planning business expansion anyway, and if you're in a sector of what we do like we are, this is a great time to borrow money. You may fall into one of these roles where business gets forgiven or this, that, and the other, but bottom line, the interest rates are going to be low and stay low for a long time. So it's a great time for expansion if that's where your business is. What we're finding is again, what can we do online that we have not done before? And the answer is really virtually everything. The amazing part is the efficiency of all of us working online. And that was the one thing that I think will change the way we do business going forward. I live in Los Angeles, and I live in Washington, D.C. So I am always commuting to work, and I'm always wasting time on the freeways. I can't believe how much more efficient I personally have been staying at home. I kind of like it. I'm probably the one person that's enjoying this because I'm not getting on a plane, flying somewhere, rushing off to a meeting, but literally having the time to sit and plan and think, which is, you know, what we don't get to do a lot of. We also ought to be thinking about what good we can do in the world, and I think everybody is, but it's great for business, too. It's people want to know that we have a conscience. We are in a business that is value-driven and politically active and people doing things for causes. So I think this is a time to actually reinforce the good part about what we all do for a living and how are we totally giving back or how can we emphasize the good deeds that our companies are doing for each other. And it's got to be authentic. It's stuff that, you know, that we really mean comes from the heart. We have a deli in Alexandria. Liz, I don't know if you've ever gone to the Old Town Deli, but we've been eating what's called a stinky salad there for years. We love this place, and it's a hole in the wall. Well, they're going bankrupt. So we've bought 100 stinky salads. We can't have them until we're all back in the office, but hopefully we're trying to keep somebody else working. And I would encourage everybody within your ability to do that to try and be supportive of whether it's a local deli or whether it's one of our fellow political consultants. So this is a time, too, that we look at our efficiency, our cost, our time, and how can we reconstruct our companies. I don't know really who's on the call, so I don't know if I'm offending anyone or not, but I have a hard time getting my younger staff members, my millennials and younger, to do a lot of face-to-face talking with anybody, let alone their colleagues, let alone their clients. But at this time, everybody is really forced to talk to each other. We do multiple calls a day. It's an all-hands-on-deck call. It doesn't last very long. We are scheduling face-to-face meetings with our clients at a level in which I never succeed in getting our account managers to do. They find they can't just get by with text and email, but really we're keeping Zoom in business. And I love that, and it's good for business. It's good for everybody. And I think that that's something that's going to come out of this, hopefully, that we continue to do as a process and a good business service. So I think that's really about it. I'm looking for the upside. If anybody has any other ideas of what we can do, let's do it. Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you so much, Becky. I'll repeat one more time. Any more questions?
Oh.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, this is Trey. I was just going to, if I could, follow on both what Liz and Becky said. You know, we spent the first 9 years of operations in a carriage house with a dispersed work environment. So the working at home has never really been a crisis for us. But I think one of the things that I brought up earlier, the culture, and Becky and Liz both hit on this, is the scheduling, you know, schedule a virtual all staff means to communicate with your people and keep up. That's not just with your staff, but with your clients. You know, we're hosting client happy hours on a daily basis, or we're doing contests for staff and our clients that they can do online. We did a show and tell event last week. So things like that. And for employees, I think as we're going through this process, again, having been the victim of a couple recessions over the years, you know, you got to be transparent in every communication. Tell them exactly what's happening, when it's going to happen, and what the impact will be to them, as well as the company. But the people can care about themselves and their own livelihoods the most. Becky's point about assisting restaurants. There's several restaurants I want to keep in business because I love them, both in D.C. and in Oklahoma City. And so, you know, we've been doing takeout. We've been doing drive-by pickup. We've donated to certain charities that we would really generally would not have thought of except a situation like this emerged. And then there are some other retailers that are out there that I want to keep in business because I'm a big fly fisherman. I love to buy fly rods and things in my local shop. I want to go and support them. So I've been buying more fly tying materials than I could possibly need, but it keeps me busy in the evening since I can't go out. So making purchases. I also think it's important, and this is something that most of our team is doing, is speaking with all your employees to gain and understand their personal situation and make sure they know what your expectations, the expectations for the business are. You know, and part of that is also, and this is a key point on IT issues, which I know many of you are in the IT or the technology sector on the online sector, but investing in remote hardware, software, and access points for your employees. If they don't have high-speed internet at home, get it for them. But ensure your own IT security for your business and for your staff, because that, as we all know, that's become more and more important. The other thing I've seen as an opportunity for culture is delegate responsibilities to your senior management team. It may just provide you with a test, provide you a testing ground for possible successors to your business, people who step up in a crisis. Pay attention to those people. And then, as I said before, you know, engender loyalty by avoiding layoffs as long as possible. Now, that doesn't mean to your own detriment, but if you have to go down that path, you know, make sure everybody knows what's happening, when it's going to happen, and what the impact's going to be to them up front so everybody's clear. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, and I have a few final thoughts on demonstrating value to your clients.
Okay, thanks, Trey. I've got one comment about what Trey had to say. You know, I think when it comes to supporting local businesses, I mean, I'm a big believer in supporting local independent businesses. For me, that's three things. One, it's support your local independent record stores. Two, support your local wine shops. And three, support your small independent winemakers wherever they may be. So we've got a couple of questions in the queue. Steve Richard has a question. I want to take Steve live. And Steve, you're now live. What's your question, buddy?
Hey, Jamie. Thanks. My question is for Trey, and I don't know how many other people this applies to, but we are a small firm. We're an LLC. We've got some staff that we are paying, and the PPP loan will probably be helpful there. But there are a couple of members of the LLC owners who essentially don't really draw an income. We're not considered employees, but we do take a monthly, essentially a stipend to keep us afloat until revenue comes in. Like most political firms, the bulk of our revenue generation comes at the end of the even-numbered year, and we, you know, float money through the odd-numbered year and into the even-numbered year. Are payments like that, do you know if payments like that are eligible to be covered by the PPP program?
I believe, and I should have had John vote on this call, but I believe that owners are allowed to take a income up to a certain level. I think it's, I want to say the max level that you can pay an employee out of it is up to like $8,000 and change. So I think the owners could potentially fall in that category. I know you can pay your subcontractors and your employees. So I don't know if they treat K-1 owners of a LLC that way, but hopefully they will, because that's something that I think is very important to a lot of us. Again, this is something the APC is working on as well, or considering working on, to get with the SBA and make sure that our people are taken care of.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, we got one more question. We didn't get your name. If you're still on the line, we'll take you live.
My name is Arturo.
Sir?
Arturo. Yeah. And
Arturo.
Hello. And my question is towards Becky. I do a lot of virtual things as well for my business. And was just wondering, you know, what virtual resources do you recommend during this time?
So we're big Zoom people. I don't find Skype quite as helpful. We are also big Domo consumers, switching a lot of the functions of the company to Domo, which can be accessed anywhere. Because all of our systems, our fundraising is all virtual, we're doing our work, all of the reports that we have are virtual. Our accountants, we do a lot, we handle a lot of money, we raise a lot of money, we handle a lot of money. That's all virtual as well. There's almost not a function that we do that we haven't been able to transfer to an online service or program. I know the FBI was putting out some press today about Zoom not being as secure as it could be, but I think it was more pertaining to people that were putting Zoom links on social media rather than trying to keep it within a controlled universe. So that's what we're doing.
Here we go. Okay, so thank you, Arturo, for your question. We're going to start. I'm here to kind of talk about, everybody knows an attorney that utters some version of the phrase where some people see adversity, others see opportunity, and there are those opportunities out there. A couple of weeks ago, we were kind of freaking out, like when all of a sudden our primary calendar got ripped up, and the next primary we're involved in is not until May 19th, if that's even going to happen, and it made me really think about, what am I going to do? How are we going to, to payroll and handle all the functions of our business and stay viable in this really critical election year. So I got a phone call from a client who asked us about, using teletown halls, which is one of the services we offer, and using them in a way we hadn't thought about. And I started thinking about, the tools, what we offer. We offer phone calls, we offer texts, we offer robocalls, teletown halls, and, things of that nature. Like, generally, it's an outbound communication tools. And it made me start thinking about what we can do, how we can take our services and apply them to not only the private sector, but also the public sector. And, if you think about, like, just from a public sector perspective, what is the core function, the core principle of how a municipal government operates? It operates under the principle of assembly. There's all these zoning meetings and budget meetings, and there's all kinds of, it's meetings. If you can't meet, how is that government supposed to function? So then we started thinking about, what tools do we offer that would help a government to function in some form by being able to continue to hold these zoning meetings and budget meetings and things like that? So keep us viable. So I thought of our teletown hall tools, and basically we're now using teletown halls to substitute for public comment. Think about if your local highway is going to be widened, or there has to be, before the first shovel hits the ground, somebody's going to have to have there's going to be something put out into the public arena, and there has to be a comment period about it. How are you going to conduct that comment period? So we've been partnering with public affairs firms and who have social media practices, and we're putting together plans to use the social media practice to advertise this public comment period, and then we provide the machinery behind it to collect that information. So that's just one simple example of how we can help make these things happen. And this stuff is going to go on for the next the next 3 or 4 months, and then, and that's assuming we don't have much of a return of the coronavirus in the fall. But it's helped my staff and I just kind of rethink how we can use the tools and the strategies that we've used over the past 25 years and apply them in this kind of an arena. We're talking to a developer and about doing a similar kind of provide a teletown hall type structure to provide the comment period and then use IVR technology to collect data, polling data and things like that to help give them guidance on, what they go say to the zoning committee and help them get the permits they need to move forward. I mean, it's having to think outside the box, but it's bringing in some revenue at the same time. So, it's made my head hurt a little bit. It's caused me some stress. But it's also made me think very creatively, and I've challenged my team to, our folks to think the same way too, and just, obviously reach back out to, everybody who offers, teletown halls. I mean, if you can't do a town hall on purpose, then you have to do a teletown hall. And now it's not only usually, it's mainly been congressional folks and statewide candidates and things who have been doing teletown halls. We're doing them all the way down to the city council level because it's the easy way to connect, to connect your elected official with large groups of people. I mean, some people are using, people are using Zoom and several other streaming apps to do so. Although, Zoom, it's kind of geared towards a smaller group of, you got kind of a finite universe that you can connect with that way. We're even doing, we have a governor who in the process of dealing with their coronavirus in their state, we've been doing virtual press briefings where we're using a teletown hall interface to have press call in. The governor makes a statement, takes some questions, and we do this every 30 minutes. We do this, like every other day. And it allows the interface allows us to kind of control the flow. People out there are scared. And, I mean, we're scared as business people and as consultants, but every voter out there has a degree of anxiety right now. And one of the things that we can do as consultants is we can convince our clients, our elected and our candidates, to reach out to these voters and to try to either assure them or at least bring some other people to the table in a town hall or some other kind of, whatever kind of streaming function you want to use to assure people and give them information to kind of alleviate some of those fears. We did a town hall a week and a half ago with a congressman in New York. We dialed 86,000 people. We had 20,000 people on the phone. We had 482 questions logged into queue. And, we got to answer about 25 questions. The congressman's staff answered questions the rest of the day. But to this day, they can't ever remember a telethon hall having people asking for that kind of input and being that, having so many questions and wanting so many answers. Every one of our clients, every one of us has clients who are dealing with stuff like that right now. And it's up to us to maybe lead them to a solution to help them reach their voters and their constituents and to help provide a solution for their, for their campaigns. So, that's about all I've got to say. But there's kind of light at the end of the tunnel. There's ways to do this and a way to make money. Just got to think. And be willing to pivot a little bit. Okay, we got one more question in queue. And again, we did not get this person's name from our screener. So, and then I clicked on them and they went away. Oh, there we go. All right.
Hey,
so,
Jay, can I ask?
We've got,
did
Jimmy, could I add something?
Sure.
While you're queuing up the next question for Arturo, I cannot believe that I forgot to mention the most important thing that is making our company work, and that is Slack. I don't know if you Slack in your company, but we've Slacked it a couple of years now, and I don't think that we could live without it, without complete mutiny on the part of our staff members. So for what it's worth, Slack.
Ditto. We use Slack. Our team uses Slack and Microsoft Teams.
Yeah, we suggested Teams, Trey, and they just said, absolutely not. We are not giving up our Slack.
Well,
I think we're getting ready to roll out a couple of new tools, and I think we're going to integrate either Slack or WhatsApp into our new stuff. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Trey.
No, go right ahead. You had a question?
I think Slack is a little more secure, Jamie.
Okay. All right. So we have one more question before we end, and we'll go over our polls real quick. But the person whose name we did not get, I want to take you live, and I'd like you to ask our question.
Hello, this is Kevin Hoare in Portland, Oregon. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
So the thought I had was, this is something I've done with some service providers that I work with on a personal basis, is they pre-sell their services at a discount if you pay for so many sessions ahead of time. Is that something that might be a possibility? Has anybody thought of that to work with clients that might want to do that at a discount to help out cash flow now for something you know you can deliver later, especially knowing we're going to get closer to a busy time in the fall?
We've done some of that, particularly we've had a couple of inquiries from organizations about, prepaying, knowing that they've got a 3-month campaign coming up, coronavirus be damned. So we've started to entertain it a little bit. I haven't really thought it all the way through. I would defer to Liz and Becky and Trey for their thoughts.
Yeah, I think anytime you get an economy of scale from a buyer, always offer the discounts. We do a lot of communications and corporate comms in the political space, and we also have a special advertising company. And so obviously our specialty products are mostly used as donor gifts for organizations or incentive items. And so we miss the window to do it for this quarter, but as we head into the June quarter, or the second quarter of the year, we're going to be providing some deep discounts for pre-purchasing of these types of incentive items. Obviously, it's product, not services, but if they, pre-buy X number, thousands of units on this date, we'll give you this discount as opposed to buying it, June 30th or July 1st to give out. I think those are good things to do when it's not, if you can make, even if it's just break-even money on the product to have revenue coming in.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, we've got one more question from Greg in New Orleans.
Jamie, are you finding? I want to go back to the Teletown Hall question that you had. Are you finding that that the
Sure.
governments that you worked with are accepting that as an opportunity to get around to navigate the whole problem with sunshine laws or any of the open meetings laws?
I mean, as far as we're concerned, yes. We're relying on the entities that we're working with run it past their legal folks. But we have yet to have any pushback.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, folks, we just got a couple of minutes here. I wanted to go over our poll question. We had about not quite half the people vote on our poll question, which was on a scale of 1 to 5, where 1 is not at all and 5 is a great deal. how much do you think the COVID-19 crisis will negatively affect the financial health of your business? If you tried to look at this as a bell curve, it wasn't really a bell. It was definitely weighted towards the people being more severely impacted. And, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think this isn't going to go away sooner. We're going to be living with it for a while. But I think over the past hour, I think we've got some good ideas about how to help deal with some of that. We at APC appreciate everybody joining the call, listening to our call, taking questions from folks. And just remember, APC is a resource for all of our members. I personally like to thank our panelists and our speakers tonight, Liz Chatterton, Becky Donatelli, Trey Richardson, and I'm Jamie Sexton. If anybody has any more questions, press zero now or forever hold your peace. Okay, one more person I would like to thank. I would like to thank Rachel Christian from Pollmakers for helping pull all this together, and I'd really like to thank Amy Navarre from APC. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. We'll do this again soon. Thank you much.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.